So as believers, as followers of Jesus, how do we respond to the new executive order regarding refugees from the president and talk of repealing Obamacare and replacing it? How do we respond?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
This order is part of our ongoing efforts to eliminate vulnerabilities that radical Islamist terrorists can and will exploit for destructive ends.
That was the voice of Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. He was explaining the background to the new executive order from President Trump concerning the ban, temporary ban on refugees from six countries which have been known as hotbeds of terrorism. The question is, how do we, as followers of Jesus, respond? Welcome to the broadcast. This is the voice of Michael Brown, hopefully by God's grace, functioning as your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. And as always, our goal here is not just to take a partisan side, conservative versus liberal, Republican versus Democrat, but rather to do our best to bring a kingdom perspective. You say, what do you mean a kingdom perspective? What I mean is, in biblical terms, in scriptural terms, how we should think as citizens of God's kingdom first and foremost. In other words, as children of God, although we live in this world, although we work hard to be good citizens and hopefully model citizens, although we are loyal to our countries to the extent that our countries are not doing evil and destructive things, that we have an even higher allegiance. And that is as citizens of God's kingdom. The question is, as citizens of God's kingdom, carrying his values, not seeking to forcefully impose those views on the world, not forcing those views on society, but rather living by those values and advocating for those values, how do we respond to the new executive order regarding refugees? How do we respond to plans to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare? How do we respond to things the president is doing, the Congress is doing? It is not just being lockstep with a party or a politician. It is hopefully being lockstep with our Creator, with our Savior, and then applying those principles, principles of wisdom, principles of compassion, principles of justice to the situations we face. Here's a number to call to weigh in. 866-348-7884. That's 866-34-TRUTH. If you're not connected with me online, just go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. And on our Facebook page, our Twitter page, our YouTube channel, you can connect with us and stay connected. I generally write 3 to 5 articles a week on cutting-edge issues, and we put out 3 or 4 videos a week dealing with Bible questions, dealing with cultural issues. So this way you will be directly in contact with us. But I mentioned yesterday that the president's claims about being wiretapped would be more credible if he had not been as reckless in certain things that he had said. Now, it must be evaluated on its own, for sure. But to give you an illustration of what I was talking about, when the president made an issue of how many people were at his inauguration compared to the inaugurations of Barack Obama in 2009 and 2013, and even alleged that the media wasn't reporting things accurately. Now, in terms of those watching worldwide, his could have been the biggest inaugural address out of the three. But pictures now have been released, official pictures, aerial pictures, which make clear that the 2009 and especially 2013 inaugurations of President Obama were more attended in person, were better attended in person than President Trump's. So again, it's the recklessness of some of the things he said that can make him less credible. Nonetheless, I think there's credibility to the wiretap charges. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us today on The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. Okay, where do I want to go first? Let's grab clip number 8, Press Secretary Sean Spicer interacting with the issue of the president's executive order on the travel ban. I want to comment on that briefly and then come back to something we talked about yesterday in terms of Christians boycotting the Disney movie Beauty and the Beast. There's some news on that, a lot of opinion about that. I plan to write on that before the day is out. But first, we'll just focus a little bit on the travel ban, and we'll come back to that later in the broadcast. Clip number 8.
As we've always maintained, the executive order was fully lawful in the first place, we would have won the related legal cases on the merits. But rather than leave America's security in limbo while the litigation dragged on, some estimates having that go up to potentially a year, the president acted to protect the national security by issuing a new executive order that addresses the court's concerns.
All right, so the court, one court in particular, raised issues with the president's executive order that would have temporarily barred refugees from 7 countries known as hotbeds for terrorism and indefinitely barred refugees from Syria, would have given preference to religious minorities that were in extreme refugee status, and then taken time to get it more extreme vetting procedures in order. Frankly, aside from the fact that there were some holes in the executive order, issues, say, with people with green cards and things like that, and the fact that it was rolled out so quickly that a lot of people in the security sector didn't know how to respond. Aside from that, I didn't have a major issue with it from a Christian perspective. Say, what? Refugees? Hurting? Needy people? Please understand, there were real issues to be addressed. There were concerns within it, but it was a temporary ban, number one. It was simply to say that we need to get things set in order properly to keep out the bad guys that shouldn't be coming in, as best as we can identify that. And by giving priority to those that really were in a minority status, we were doing what Jesus would do. In other words, helping the ones that society is not helping, helping the ones that are singled out for destruction, helping the ones that have very few places to go, helping the ones, especially Christians, who are of like faith. It was not a Muslim ban. In fact, the vast majority of Muslim countries around the world, I mean, the 7 where people couldn't come from was a tiny number comparatively to Muslim countries around the world. There was no restriction on Muslims coming in, nor was it a permanent ban. So I do understand why Christian leaders were concerned about it. I do understand that there could be presentations as if we were becoming heartless and just hyper-nationalistic, but that's not the way I saw it personally, okay? That's not the way I saw it personally. So, again, there may be more to it that I'm missing, but that's my view. That's my take. Feel free to differ with me or feel free to agree. 866-348-7884. Let's go back, though, to something we talked about yesterday. And because I'm writing on it right now, it's on my mind. Was Franklin Graham right to call for a Disney boycott? We're going to talk more about the travel ban. We're going to talk more about replacing Obamacare. Got a bunch of things. Some very interesting news about the administration of Planned Parenthood. Some interesting news about the administration's crackdown on sex trafficking. Probably haven't heard that in the news, have you? So, was Franklin Graham right to call for a Disney boycott? It was announced that there was going to be an exclusively gay moment in the new Beauty and the Beast movie. There was news that there would be, quote, a surprise for same-sex couples. This from the producer. Franklin Graham wrote last week, March 2nd, Disney is, quote, trying to push the LGBT agenda into the hearts and minds of your children. Watch out. Disney has the right to make the cartoons. It's a free country, but as Christians, we also have the right not to support their company. I hope Christians everywhere will say no to Disney. His Facebook posts were shared almost 100,000 times. Next day, March 3rd, a drive-in theater in Alabama, now newly Christian-owned, said it wouldn't show the movie, saying when companies continually force their views on us, we need to take a stand. We all make choices. I'm making mine. If we could not take our 11-year-old granddaughter and 8-year-old grandson to see a movie, we have no business watching it. If I can't sit through a movie with God or Jesus sitting by me, then we have no business showing it. Previously, so March 1st, conservative group 1 Million Moms called for a Disney boycott with a clear warning, alerting all parents. And at first for the Disney Channel, the Disney XD show, so it's a cartoon show, subtly displayed several gay kisses in an episode that aired a couple of days ago. LifeSite News asked for 100,000 signatures calling for a boycott. Tell Disney no to LGBT agenda in Beauty and the Beast. And they reached that goal in just 5 days. Now they're looking for 250,000 signatures. How do we respond to this? On the one hand, Liberty McCarter, conservative Christian millennial, writing as I do on the stream, she says, look, Disney's been sexualizing characters for a long time. And she said, boycotting or petitioning Disney over the presence of gay characters will be largely ineffective. The only way to really change culture is by fulfilling the Great Commission and introducing sinners to Jesus, which must be a neighbor out, not corporation down initiative. That's one question. What's most effective? Jonathan Merritt, who's a more moderate conservative Christian, himself admittedly same-sex attracted, he's called out, quote, the flaming hypocrisy in evangelical calls for Disney boycott, also arguing, quote, that avoiding the subject of homosexuality will not prepare kids for the real world. And he writes, quote, conservative Christian outrage over any positive portrayals of LGBT people in film and television is a tale as old as time, but this effort seems particularly misguided. It risks making Christians look like antiquated bigots, and it reeks of moral hypocrisy, and worse, it diverts energy from a more worthwhile effort teaching Christian children to coexist in a pluralistic society. And then John Pavlowitz, who is a more left-leaning pastor, he refers to, quote, the naked hypocrisy of a Christian Disney boycott. We've invited them on the air several times, never gotten a response, by the way. Quote, conservative Christians have crawled out of the church pew woodwork to rend their garments and beat their breasts at word that Disney's live-action adaptation of Beauty and the Beast will feature an openly gay character. They've loudly promised to boycott the film and Disney itself in spiritual protests. And he goes on calling it sanctimonious and things like that. There is an article on the Huffington Post where... who wrote it? Brittany Mancuso. Not sure about her background. Boycotting Beauty and the Beast is not what Jesus would do. So let's put aside the question of whether the boycott would work or not, whether it be effective or not. Let's ask the question, how should we respond as believers, especially as Christian parents? We're talking about kids. We're talking about little kids going to see a movie. And I have very, very strong opinions on this, which I'll give you my opinion shortly. But let me take a call or two on this, and then we're going to switch back to the more pressing national issues. We'll start in southern Louisiana. Grant, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
I have pondered the situation of the controversy about the gay scene in the upcoming Beauty and the Beast movie. I think this is further proof that gay activists are trying to target young children very aggressively. And knowing how hard the activists are trying to target our kids, would it be a good idea for parents and church leaders to start addressing the subject of homosexuality to younger kids? If so, How should we go about doing that? And if there are any resources out there that address this particular topic in depth to kids, I would love to hear about them.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Grant. Number one, it's about 10 years late or 15 years late for parents to start addressing these issues. There's no question that gay activists, feeling that they are standing for equality, feeling that they want to enlighten kids and help kids who are same-sex attracted and things like that, that they've been pushing this for years in media, in our schools. And of course, we need to address things. We need to address things in the most wise way we can and in the most positive, redemptive way we can. Yes, with our children. So I'll explain how on the other side of the break. And Tom Gilson, my colleague Tom Gilson, who also writes at The Stream, has a book called Critical Conversations, A Christian Parent's Guide to Discussing Homosexuality with Teens. This focuses on teens. So we're going to talk about even younger than that in a moment, but it's called Critical Conversations, A Christian Parent's Guide to Discussing Homosexuality with Teens. And I wrote an endorsement for that book as well. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. So just want to go back to Grant in southern Louisiana. So Grant, the way I would bring things up with little kids, at the earliest days, I would reinforce the importance of having a mommy and a daddy, assuming there's a two-parent home. I would reinforce that boys are special and girls are special. And as they start to get a little older, because you know, when you're 6 years old, if you say this boy likes this girl, it's like, ew, I don't like a girl. You know, they can't really conceive of that. And you ask a little boy, who do you want to marry? And you go get older, he goes, I want to marry mommy. You know, he's 4 years old. What they don't understand. But as soon as they are able to understand, Grant, I would say that you want to talk about how special it is that God made men for women and women for men. Obviously, as they get a little bit older and you begin to explain sexual functions and things like that and the birds and the bees, as it's called, then you can explain that, especially in terms of how God made each one specially for the other. And then you can begin to say, you know, once your kids are developing attractions or starting to notice the opposite sex, you can say, you know, there's some kids that are confused. Be really nice to them. Don't be mean to them. If other kids would be mean, you'd be nice. But they're boys who like other boys, or they want to marry boys, or girls like other girls want to marry girls. That's not what God intended. And there are lots of different reasons they can feel like that. But just be their friends and be loving and nice to them, and then explain, you know, why God says what he says scripturally. You can do the same with boys who think they're girls and girls who think they're boys, and just tell kids in school, hey, you be nice to them. If other kids pick on them, you be nice to them. You be their friend. And you don't have to talk about these things. You just be their friend. So, and then if they get exposed to something, if there is, you know, if they're watching Disney and they see two cartoon characters in the midst of a whole bunch of people kissing, you know, it's a little kiss. It's like, Daddy, two boys kiss. Like, yeah, that's really wrong. And the people who made those cartoons, they really don't understand. Let's pray for them. And you just point it like that. You just keep going in that direction. And by all means, use everything as a teachable moment. Some would say, well, then go to the movie and then use it as a teachable moment. Well, would you do that with other subjects that you considered wrong? Would you do that in other subjects you considered immoral? If it's a movie and it kind of makes it special, here's a boy and a girl and they're 13 and they're going to have sex for the first time and it's, you know, ostensibly a children's movie, would you bring your kids and say, okay, let's make that a teachable moment? You make it a teachable moment if something occurs that you weren't expecting, right? But you don't go out of your way to expose them to something wrong. Now, all that being said, so thank you, Grant, very much for bringing this up. 866-348-7884. According to CBN, Heather Sells, this goes back to March 4th. Disney downplays LGBT angle amid Beast backlash, but can't dodge gay cartoon Kiss. Amid the controversy over a groundbreaking gay scene in Disney's upcoming Beauty and the Beast movie, director Bill Condon and cast member Josh Gad appeared to be pulling back on previously bold statements to the media about creating, quote, an exclusively gay moment. It's a moment that many people of faith are already protesting, so on. Just recently, Condon told Attitude, a European gay lifestyle magazine, about what he called a nice exclusively gay moment in a Disney movie between the characters Gaston and LeFou, played by Gad. LeFou is somebody who one day wants to be Gaston and another day wants to kiss Gaston. Condon further explained that Gad, quote, makes something really subtle and delicious out of it. Yet on Thursday night during the movie's world premiere, Gad and Condon gave conflicting messages. On the one hand, Gad told USA Today that he's really proud to play LeFou, and Condon described the gay scene as a wonderful gay moment. Then Gad pointed out, however, that there's nothing in the script that said LeFou is gay. Condon said, I think LeFou's sexuality has been a little overstated. In the meantime, Star versus the Forces of Evil cartoon did show several same-sex couples during a concertine while the band sings the song Best of Friends. What's Disney going to say about that? All right. If it's being overblown, it's being overblown by the Disney people themselves. They're the ones that got this word out. 866-34-TRUTH. We go to Andre in Woodridge, Virginia. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
Wonderful. I wanted to comment briefly on the whole Disney ban.
Yep.
And just say that I totally understand the concerns that parents have today in regards to the things that their children are subject to. However, as Christians, we really are called to be in the world, if not of the world. And families across the board, not just Christian families, really struggle with teachable moments, as you mentioned earlier. We try to shield children from so much while letting TV babysit them, but not taking the opportunity to have the dialogue that our parents had with us when we encountered things that weren't necessarily appropriate for us to encounter. The world can't raise our children. We have to raise our children. So do I say ban Disney? Maybe not so much. After all, it is an incredible story. Lots of us enjoyed it as cartoons. I do say, however, you have a preparatory conversation. You also carry on a conversation after the film. Now, would I take my child to go see Slashers 32, knowing that it's going to be a horrible film, and just say, well, we'll make it a teachable moment? Of course not, because that is outwardly insane.
Mm-hmm.
But a two-minute section in a film that is 95% acceptable, I think there are good lessons for a child to come away from the film for, and you would do them a disservice to keep them from the overall lesson due to a small bit that is inappropriate, when we really could curb and call that with good old-fashioned family conversation and raising the kids.
Hey, Andre, thank you for weighing in with clarity and in an articulate manner. I would say that reflects the fact that your folks had such conversations with you growing up. Thank you, sir. I really appreciate the wisdom in what you're saying and your approach. 866-348-7884. So let me give you my thoughts as well. Number one, I don't think a boycott would be effective right now for many reasons. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't do it. Okay, that's number one. Number two, we are hypocritical. And Andre just pointed out that we let TV or social media or the internet babysit our kids. And then we're going to protest this one particular scene in this movie. So I believe we're very hypocritical. We watch all kinds of things that are objectionable. We let our kids watch all kinds of things that are objectionable. Some of us do. That's hypocritical. No doubt about it. And that's regrettable. That being said, I in conscience have a problem giving my money over when something is shouted from the rooftops at me in terms of a particular stance. For example, I don't know that where the money goes, the profit goes in some of the local stores, the grocery stores where I shop. I don't know that. But I do know that if they made some major campaign, we are donating our money to support Planned Parenthood, I couldn't shop there out of conscience and response. And that, to me, is my bigger issue. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown. I am delighted to be with you. 866-348-7884. Let me say one more thing about the whole boycott issue, all right? One more thing about the boycott issue, and then we're going to switch subjects, go back to Donald Trump, the administration. All right. Years ago, when I first started taking a stand about gay activism, felt the Lord speak to me, reach out and resist, reach out to the people with compassion, resist the agenda with courage. I began to interact with Starbucks because they were very out and proud, supporting of gay activism in the city in which I lived. I reached out to them, spoke to a national director, so it was somewhere in their corporate offices, and he made clear that they were absolutely standing for equality and standing for tolerance. And when I asked them what they have done to stand, say, with the pro-life movement or teen abstinence movement or pro-marriage movement, the guy immediately started to react, got angry with me, and started to get a little touchy, I should say. And I said, okay, we won't go there right now. I see your reaction, because I was not going to provoke a fight then. Subsequently, at one of the gay pride events the next year, one of my colleagues was there, and they just snapped a lot of pictures. And in those days, the events were more vulgar. They had more overtly sexual themes. They've become, quote, somewhat more family-oriented since. But they absolutely crossed all kinds of offensive lines. So I took the pictures, some of which were even shameful to look at. You know, I didn't go through the whole stack. Said, fine, I'm sending them over. Sent them to the same fellow, and I said, this is what you're sponsoring. Are you telling me you stand behind this? He said, yes, we stand for equality. I said, well, you sponsored at the local event, you sponsored that event, and this is what took place. You don't have a problem with it. No, we don't. And I quote and cite some of the correspondence to that in my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America. All right, so I've never been a coffee drinker my whole life, so I was never a Starbucks client. I never went there on a regular basis. However, Starbucks, they're at all the major airports, and I'm in and out of airports all the time. And in my old days, used to love to eat chocolate brownies and other chocolate treats and things like that before I changed my relationship with food. If you don't have our book yet, Breaking the Stronghold of Food, get it. It's getting rave reviews from many readers who have been transformed by it, off their diabetes medicine, lost 20, 30 pounds already in a couple of months and are thriving. So anyway, in my old days, though, I loved chocolate, and Starbucks often had good brownies and things like that. And, of course, they've got water. Sometimes I wouldn't be getting a bottle of water. So if someone said to me, hey, I want to meet you and talk about some things, let's meet at Starbucks, that was their deal. I didn't tell them I can't do it, I won't do it. But I would never take my own money and spend it at Starbucks. You say, oh, you're going to hurt the company? No. Number one, I was not a regular customer there anyway, right? Number two, I never tried to call for some major national boycott or think that I could make a difference. No, this was just my own conscience. My own conscience, okay? So that, to me, is where I'd land on the Beauty and the Beast. That in conscience, based on what they're making of this gay moment, exclusively gay moment, that in conscience tells me, you know, I don't want to give them my money over this, okay? You say, aren't there other things they've done that are wrong, or other messages they've said? Yeah, I've got no problem with someone saying, I just don't want to give them my business. That, to me, is the ultimate reason for a boycott, in my own opinion. So just wanted to share that with you. All right. We come back, Anthony and Drew, you are next up as we focus on the president, immigration, stand, and other issues. Stay right here.
Change the world. Change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, thank you for joining us on The Line of Fire today, 866-348-7884. Before I get to other calls, I want to bring on a special guest as we want to talk about the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, so-called Obamacare, the plans to replace it. Some say it's Obamacare Lite. Others more positive on it. But I just want to bring on a guest with another approach. Anthony Happ, Vice President of External Relations for Samaritan Ministries International. It's one of the largest healthcare sharing ministries in America. Samaritan members make up a quarter of a million people nationwide. Anthony, thanks so much for joining us on the broadcast today.
My pleasure, Dr. Brown. Thanks for the opportunity.
Sure thing. Well, tell us about the concept of healthcare sharing and doing it as a ministry. How does this work?
Sure. Healthcare sharing is, simply put, crowdfunding for healthcare. It's the Acts 2 Church. Basically, Christians taking care of one another in a very practical way through the sharing of one another's medical needs. And that sharing is done directly, person to person, household to household, without using any insurance. And additionally, the burdens, the emotional burdens and the spiritual burdens are addressed as well. It goes way beyond the financial.
All right. So this is not government insurance, and this is not something where you have a certain policy that you're making payments on every month. How does it work?
Yeah, that's exactly right. These are like-minded believers who are committed to the concept of helping each other, of considering others better than themselves, considering others before they consider themselves. And they commit to paying what we call a monthly share. It's not a premium. It doesn't come to the office, but rather the set amount, $4.95, is the current monthly share for a family of any size. And as a Samaritan member, I'm directed to send that monthly share directly to another Samaritan household who has a medical burden. The great thing about that is that as a member, I know exactly where my money goes, how it's being used, how it's being stewarded, and I have the assurance that it's not supporting practices that are in violation to my faith.
All right. So what about the first, let me say there's so much to commend this. We've had friends involved in this or similar ministries over the years, from way back, as far as I remember. But it's something you hear very little about, which is surprising, given the problems with insurance today, health insurance, the tremendous burden of it, and a lot of the difficulties in terms of compromising values and things like that. But what about the privacy issue of someone saying, hey, look, I don't want the whole world to know I'm sick or I'm struggling, and now I'm getting all this money sent to me directly. How has that played out for the people within your organization?
It's been embraced. Privacy-wise, the whole world isn't finding out. It's simply this group of believers. And it's actually not even all 69,000 households or families. Rather, it's the families that are sharing or sending to my particular medical need. And we always respect the privacy of our members and the prayer requests that go out are always at the discretion of the members themselves. So there's never any information that's released that a member wouldn't want released. The member has full say in that. And it's embraced because this allows us to experience community, to be involved in one another's lives, to share the burden, to be able to encourage one another. And so our members embrace it, and that's one of the reasons they love this approach.
All right, so Galatians 6, bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. This is a very practical way to do it in a society where we're not all living in the same neighborhood and can't therefore bear one another's burdens. All right, another obvious question. Someone may be in a critical care situation, maybe cancer treatment, maybe a serious injury, and they're in intensive care for weeks. Medical bills can go into the hundreds of thousands of dollars. Do those kinds of needs actually get met?
They do. By God's grace, every single penny. We've been sharing for about 22 years now, and every single medical need that has qualified to be shared has been shared. And the ones that are really large, you know, that's usually the question that people on the skeptical side have. Okay, well, I could see how this works for the small stuff, but what about the really large medical need? We've had at least a dozen, if not a couple dozen, medical needs that have exceeded $1 million. Certainly plenty, dozens and dozens of medical needs well into the hundreds of thousands of dollars. But the process is exactly the same, whether the medical bill is $500 or $500,000. And it's important to realize that Samaritan members now are sharing $23 million per month. And
wow.
So there's quite a bit of resource there. And, of course, at the top of it all is our driving philosophy that Jesus Christ is the provider of all our medical needs. Samaritan doesn't position itself as the panacea or silver bullet to this healthcare mess we're in. This is simply one way that God is using to meet the needs of his children.
And if you're an individual, how much do you pay?
The monthly share for one person is $220, and a couple or a two-person family sends $440.
And a family of any size, $495.
That's correct, yes.
All right. So again, when I say pay, that's the wrong way to put it. It would be the share that you contribute every month. And one other practical question. Okay, something happens. You run to the emergency room in the hospital. The first thing is, okay, they get your info, your insurance. Do you have a card that the hospital's recognized? You go to a doctor's visit. They want to know what they're not going to do anything until they see your insurance coverage. How does that work?
Yes, our members do have an identification card, but we are all direct pay or self-pay. We're paying cash, and we tell the person at the front desk that we're doing that. At the front desk, the main question they're trying to answer is insurance or no insurance, so they can place the patient in the correct bucket, so to speak. And so I think there's a general misnomer that if I walk into a facility, I'm going to be denied care or somehow be given the generic treatment or allowed to bleed to death on the ER floor if I don't have coverage. And that certainly has not been our experience in 22 years. In fact, the exact opposite has taken place, where providers are excited and really encouraged to learn that something like this is happening, because it saves them money. It allows them to practice medicine directly. It removes the middleman. And now the patient is the consumer, and the patient and the doctor can have a relationship. So we're seeing a more acceptance and even an embracing of this kind of model, and doctors tend to really, really appreciate this approach.
All right, so if folks want to find out more about Samaritan Ministries and this option, especially if the government is going to go in a way now where we can make our own choices and people are going to have a lot more freedom in terms of their provider and how they deal with the healthcare issue, where do folks go to find out?
Sure, the best spot is SamaritanMinistries.org. Samaritan is singular, so similar to Samaritan's Purse, but a singular, Samaritan Ministries, no affiliation with the Franklin Graham Organization, just SamaritanMinistries.org.
All right, so right now, friends, 224,000 individuals total, all 50 states, more than 68,000 member households. This may be just the thing that you need and just the way that you can participate in sharing these burdens together. Anthony Hopp, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Dr. Brown. Thank you.
All right. 866-34-TRUTH. We go to the phones now. Anthony in Richmond, Virginia, thanks so much for holding. We now switch topics as we return to President Trump and the immigration ban. You're on.
Oh, yes, thank you. Hello, Dr. Brown. I wanted to say, I know I've heard a lot of Christians who have condemned this, and I understand them. They want to feel as, you know, they're commanded by Christ to be open, loving, and all that. But I just wanted to also point out that when it comes to Islam, Islam is a religion that is fundamentally at all Christian values. It is an oppressive and in many ways dangerous religion that does condone violence more than other religions. And by bringing practitioners of Islam into our country, we're really being just foolish. As much as we want to help them, they're them. And I wanted to say that basically, if we by bringing them in, we're not helping anyone. We're not helping ourselves, and we're not really helping them. And we need to make sure that this religion is fundamentally an ideological battle, that it isn't able to spread into our country. And the more than we keep out, the better and the safer they will be, in my opinion. I approve of his executive order.
All right. Hey, Anthony, I appreciate you weighing in. Thank you for calling. Here's where I would respond to that. Number one, plenty of Muslims are not radical terrorists. That's number one. Number two, plenty of Muslims are genuine refugees and would love to live in America and start a new life. Number three, we do have freedom of religion in the country. That being said, to the degree that Muslims want to come in here and change America and ultimately take over the country with Islam and do it with violence, by all means, if we know they're coming, they should be allowed in. Why should anyone? It doesn't matter who you are. If that's your goal, take over and assert your ways by violence, no way.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We do not make the law, but are sworn to enforce it. We have no other option. We are going to work closely to implement and enforce it humanely, respectfully, and with professionalism, but we will enforce the law.
That is the voice of John F. Kelly, Secretary of Homeland Security, speaking of the new travel ban. Remember, this is not a ban on all Muslims. This is a temporary ban on Muslims coming from, on refugees coming from six countries that were identified previously by the Obama administration as being hotbeds of terrorism as well. You say, I thought it was seven originally. Yes, Iraq was on the list, but Iraq is no longer on the list. It was because of lobbying by the Iraqi government saying that our vetting is good enough over here in Iraq. Trust us. That's part of the story as I understand it. Syria was put on an indefinite list in terms of refugees. That is not there at the moment, probably because of the greatness of the humanitarian crisis. And again, this is only, 120 days so that there can be better vetting procedures put in process. On the face of it, I don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with it. Yeah, here and there, there's going to be an individual that's hurt. Here and there, there's going to be somebody that gets stuck that shouldn't have. But I don't look at this as, say, the ship St. Louis that of refugees from Europe, Jewish refugees, trying to flee the Nazis, and America wouldn't take the ship in, and it ends up having to go back, refuse elsewhere, goes back to Europe, and most of the people on the ship end up getting killed in Nazi concentration camps, or Palestine under the British mandate, and Jewish refugees fleeing Europe, trying to get away from the Nazis, getting away from slaughter, and Britain closing the borders and not letting them in. I don't see this the same. I see this as temporary and selective. That's just my view. And I'm very connected with refugee issues because we have workers in our ministry working around the world, and a good number of them working right in the midst of refugee camps. So we're quite sensitive to these issues. And a good number of our grads involved in Muslim outreach, and they have nothing but love for the Muslim world. Yeah, they recognize the dangers of radical Islam, and they recognize the deeply different ideologies between our faith and Muslim faith. But they have great love for Muslims, want to help them. So I'm not saying these things from a position of insensitivity. And my family in late 70s, early 80s took refugees into our home for a period of years from Vietnam. And then our church, we were all out of room taking people out of our homes. We got apartment buildings for Ethiopian refugees and work with them. That was just part of our life, part of our way of life. So the last thing that I'm doing is saying we shouldn't be compassionate and helpful. Just saying the church should focus on compassion, the government should focus on security, and then we can come up with good ways that America can be a haven without self-destructing in the process. Just my view. 866-34-TRUTH. We go to Denver, Colorado. Drew, thanks so much for holding. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yeah, hey. It's difficult to say, but I want to take in preface that, you know, I'm a hard right conservative, evangelical, former military, former police. And although I support, you know, 90%, maybe up to 90% of what Trump does, I was not one of those ones that supported him in the primaries and felt handcuffed to support him in the general. That said, I feel like all those things that evangelicals that supported him in the primaries, every one of those things and those negative attributes that he definitely displayed that he didn't have contrition for, that there still isn't contrition for, that those negatives, let's say 90% of what he does is great, the economy takes off, but those 10% of negatives that Christians disregarded will eventually become the ultimate Achilles heel for not only Trump, conservatives, but ultimately the whole of the Christian community in the United States, because all those non-Christians are going to look and go, well, he look at the mistake he made, you know, 4 years from now, 8 years from now, you know, and that's the Christian's fault. They knew he had that weakness. They made concessions. They knew about this. And I just have this nagging suspicion that that is going to happen to the church, that so many of those Christians that supported him in the primaries made so many excuses. You shouldn't judge. Oh, it's just, you know, and all those excuses. I think ultimately that will be his Achilles heel.
Yeah. Yeah, Drew, I appreciate that. I also opposed him in the primaries and then reluctantly got behind him as president, but have gotten more and more behind him as he's done certain right things and good things. But yeah, Drew, here's how we maintain our integrity. We say we're standing with our president as our president, and Barack Obama was our president even when we differed with him. And we're applauding him when he does right, but correcting him when he does wrong. If we just are only supportive and only in his camp, then if he does something wrong, that we get blamed for it, or we get painted with it negatively. Yeah, there's definitely truth to that. So we must be, as my colleague Daryl Bach said when he was on with me, kind of the third state or the third estate, that you've got the two major parties, but then we have our voice, and our voice is with God. So when Joshua saw the captain of the Lord's host in Joshua 5, it says, "You forests are against us," he basically answers, "No, I've come from the Lord. You align with me." And that's how we need to do so. That's how we need to do that. Thank you for the call. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Westport, Connecticut. Also, Drew, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. How are you?
Doing very well. Thank you.
One of the things I saw on your Facebook was, should Christians boycott Disney? And I was just going to weigh in. I think that that'd be a good idea, because I've seen a few things on YouTube and other things like that that, I mean, if you look at the Disney symbol itself, you can see the subtle 666 Mark of the Beast sign, and you can see the subtle indoctrination and inculcation of the minds of the young people through the subliminal messaging. And I think, hang on.
I'm much more with you on the subliminal messaging, but you feel pretty sure that there's a subtle 666 Mark of the Beast sign in Disney?
Well, yes. In the Disney logo, I think, in the I'm just going to bring it up right here. I think that there is some subtle, I mean, it could possibly maybe not be, but I believe in the first half of the W in Walt, in the I in the Disney, and then in the Y at the end of the Disney, you can see maybe a subtle resemblance there.
Yeah, tell you what, Drew, we're actually out of time, but and I thought you were going to weigh in on the immigration ban, but that's fine. Yeah, I would focus on the messages in the Disney movies and Disney TV, the overt messages, and where there's clear subliminal messaging. I say clear because there's a point someone's trying to get across in between the lines. I'd focus on that. I would discard the 666 Walt Disney logo part, though. All right. Thank you, sir, for the call. Friends, great time to join with us. Do you have a heart for Jewish ministry, seeing Jewish people come to faith? Right now, go to lineoffire.org. Find out how we can partner together. My bottom line today, stay with the truth. You can never go wrong. So as believers, as followers of Jesus, how do we respond to the new executive order regarding refugees from the president and talk of repealing Obamacare and replacing it. How do we respond?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know something really interesting? Something very, very interesting is that often left-wing believers, left-wing Christians, who's a believer or not, God knows, but those who profess Christianity and lean left, those that are Jewish and lean left, it's interesting, they'll often quote passages from the prophets about justice. And the civil rights leaders, like Martin Luther King, would often quote from the prophets, calls for justice, calls to stand for the orphan, for the widow. And many times they'll put less emphasis on other laws, say laws in the five books of Moses. If you are a liberal Jew, that would be the case. You would say, well, the five books of Moses, they provide guidance, not governance, and there are larger principles, the moral principles of the scriptures that we emphasize, things like that. I find that interesting. I believe what we should do is take in the whole Bible. What we should do is look at what all of Scripture says. What we should do is say, okay, as followers of Jesus, how do we relate to issues like immigration? How do we relate to health care? How do we relate to loving our neighbor as ourselves? How do we relate to righteous and moral issues? How do we put all these things together? That's what we're talking about today on The Line of Fire. I also want to bring you some reflections from Israel as well. 866-348-7884 is the number to call. Okay, right at the end of the last hour, I got a caller that I thought was going to address the issues having to do with the new temporary immigration ban from six countries, refugees from six countries under the Trump administration to be put in effect, 9 days from now, so 10 days from when it was issued. There was criticism that the initial executive orders rolled out too quickly. Now critics are saying, well, why wait 10 days? Because you're going to let all the bad guys in. And they're saying, no, we got that covered. But this way we'll get everything set in order. And anyway, I thought there was going to be conversation about that. Instead, the caller wanted to weigh in on something that we discussed earlier in the broadcast, namely the question of boycotting Beauty and the Beast, boycotting Disney in general because of gay themes, etc. The caller suggested that there is a subtle hint at 666, so hence the Antichrist, in the Walt Disney logo. As I said to the caller, forget about that one. Forget about that. Talk about the movies. Talk about the themes. Talk about what messages are being sent to the kids. Talk about all that. Great. Do it by all means, but leave this stuff out. Looking at the website, illuminatisymbols.info/Disney-666/. You have the Walt Disney Pictures logo, so it's his signature, Walt Disney. Look at the beginning of the W. It's a six. As would be a lot of people writing a W with a certain script, rounded script. Look at the D. It's a backwards six. That's right in the middle. Look at the end, the Y with the loop. It's a six. So they've got this highlighted in red. Oh, and to make matters worse, if you don't go for the backwards six in the middle, the dot of the I, that looks, looks like kind of a six if you look at it like that over the I in Disney. Friends, forget about it. Forget about it. Dr. Brown, are you sure that there's not a subtle reference to the Antichrist and the signature of Walt Disney? Tell you what, I'm sure enough that I'm never, ever, 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 ever going to tell you it's there. It ain't. It's not. Forget about it. They're bigger fish to fry.
Oh God of burning cleansing flame. Send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
If we look at history, whenever whole groups of people have been discriminated against just because of their religion or where they come from, terrible things have happened.
That's the voice of Sarah Yarjani. She's speaking about an Iranian student who was deported under the Trump ban. Obviously, this would be in the midst of legal battles and things. This goes back to February 1st, so before the ban was temporarily stopped. This instructor says, this is the kindest person you'll ever meet. So Sarah Yarjani loves yoga, meditation, boasts a 3.89 GPA at the California Institute for Human Science in Encinitas, where she's known for empathy and passion, is learning how to heal holistically. This is as reported by Teresa Watanabe in LA Times, February 1st. Quote, she's the kindest person you'll ever meet, said, I'll get this right, Zhijiang Padma, director of the Institute's Comparative Religion and Philosophy program, who taught Yarjani in a 2015 class on mind-body health. But none of that mattered last week when federal agents denied Yarjani at Los Angeles International Airport after Trump issued his executive order. She was detained for 23 hours before officers with the U.S. Customs and Border Protection told her she was no longer allowed to enter the country and sent her back to Vienna, where she'd been visiting her family during winter break. Now, let's just say, in point of fact, that this young woman had every reason to be here, that she would be a legitimate person that we would have in her system. She's now 35 years old, that President Trump would not want her out of the country, that she would should not be problematic for us. Let's just say that's the case, okay? Yeah, you're going to have some people hurt when you have something like this. It's just going to happen. When you have law and order, somebody is going to get hurt in the system because it's rigid, because it holds fast to certain procedures, because it doesn't make exceptions, okay? That is going to happen. It's unfortunate, but it's going to happen. When you put walls up, I'm talking about metaphorically, when you have boundaries, somebody's going to get hurt because they don't quite fit in properly. When you have clear lines drawn on certain issues, you can become legalistic or you can become extreme. That's going to happen. When you take the walls and barriers down, you can have anarchy. So the goal is to have a workable policy. The goal is to minimize situations like this as much as possible. That's the goal. And again, I don't know details on this. I've not looked into this case from last month. I don't know all of the reasons behind it. Was there any legitimate reason that she was banned from coming to the country? I don't even want to comment that on the whole. As a whole, I want to say this: things like this will happen. Things like this will happen. Look, we respect the authority of police, but sometimes police abuse that authority. That's unfortunate. That's highly regrettable. It does happen. But it's regrettable when it happens, and those officers need to be held accountable. There are other things where we have law in place for various reasons, and it can be abused. There can be a case legitimately where there should be an exception to the rule, but the rule doesn't allow for it. What we need to do is do our best to see that the laws are fair, that the laws are as just as possible, and that people, casualties like this are minimized, all right? But here's what concerns me. I find this to be extremely hypocritical. I'm not commenting on the woman who wrote this article or on the Times as a whole, LA Times as a whole, all right? I haven't evaluated all of their coverage on things, nor have I followed the writings of Teresa who wrote here. I'm making a more broad statement, okay? My more broad statement is this. It is hypocritical to me when those on the left draw attention to something like this, draw attention to it and say, look how bad this ban is. But they don't draw attention to the casualties of illegal immigrants. They don't draw attention to someone shot, a young woman with her father shot at random in California by an oft-arrested illegal immigrant who shouldn't have been in the country, and if in the country, should have been in jail, and then in cold blood just murders someone, apparently just to murder someone. When you have crime, when you have drugs, when you have other issues like this presenting problems for many Americans, and they're coming into our country illegally, when you have radical Muslims who were not properly vetted that are in our country that could easily be part of some sleeper cell ready to be activated when the word is given, okay? When you have these things happening and you don't have an outcry from the same ones who are upset about this 35-year-old woman, Sarah, who from Iran, who was deported, sent back to Vienna last month under the executive order of President Trump. When you get outraged over that, and don't get outraged over things even more serious, I say even more serious because being deported, even temporarily, is bad enough and traumatic enough, but being killed is a whole lot worse. That's a whole lot worse. Or being a victim of drug violence and gang violence is a whole lot worse. So that's my point. I'm sure the father whose daughter was killed in cold blood by that oft-arrested illegal immigrant a few months back in California, I'm sure he would much rather have his daughter temporarily deported from the country and unable to come in for various reasons and still have her alive. So if you're going to be outraged, don't be selective in your outrage. Be consistent in your outrage. Otherwise, you are what we call a hypocrite. Look, I wrote an article calling out fellow conservatives, calling out those on the right, morally, politically, conservatively, and saying, why is it that we're justifying things President Trump does and we condemn President Obama for the same things? We were upset when President Obama was issuing executive orders and saying, what is he, some autocrat? What does he think he's just running the country himself? What about checks and balances? What about the other the balance of power with Congress and the court? And this is outrageous. And then President Trump comes in and starts issuing executive orders, and we say, at last, somebody's doing something. At last, somebody's standing up for what's right. At last, somebody's not afraid to act. Now, and it wasn't even comparing the substance of the executive orders. It was comparing the act of them, that some of us condemned Obama for one thing, and we commended Trump for the same thing. Because a lot of us weren't even looking at what the executive orders were about, but just the spirit of it. Or I'll give you a reverse example. Media was all over Kellyanne Conway. She is sitting, inappropriately so, in the White House on one of the venerable couches there. She's wearing a dress, but she's sitting on her knees with her high-heeled shoes behind her on the couch. And she's taking a picture of black college presidents and other African-American leaders that were in a special signing ceremony with President Trump. She's sitting there, and people are saying, look, how could you do that? And this is all furniture, special furniture, and this is the White House, and it's inappropriate, and so on. Well, were the same ones outraged with a picture of Barack Obama with his foot on the desk, on the president's desk, the Oval Office desk, his foot on it? Yes, president. If you're going to be outraged over one, be outraged over the other. Which was more outrageous? I'd say for the president to have his foot on the table. Now, are either worthy of a big, big media firestorm? No, they're minor things. And who knows how casual they are when there aren't cameras there, okay? And look, how they treat their time in the White House to the degree that they are venerating and appreciating the esteem of the office. That's why President Bush would always come in a jacket and tie because of the gravity of the desk behind which he sat. I appreciate that. But let's not be selective in our outrage. If we're upset about an immigrant who was had every legal right to be here and would be an ideal candidate to eventually be a U.S. citizen, as someone that we'd welcome in our country, and with our freedom of speech and religion, they'd be fine here, and we're upset with them not getting in, well, then be at least as upset with those who shouldn't have been here, who have committed acts of violence, who have been in prison multiple times and still not deported. Be consistent in your outrage. 866-34-TRUTH. We will be right back. We're going to talk about Planned Parenthood, abortion. We come back. Shake the nation, change the world. Change the world. It's fire we want, for fire we
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome to The Line of Fire. 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call. All right, before I get to the issue of Planned Parenthood, I want to talk about that and what the Trump administration has put forward or Congress has put forward. I think you'll find it extremely, extremely interesting. Before I get to that, I want to comment briefly on the proposal to repeal Obamacare. Okay? Want to come to that. And let me say this. If you've listened to me for years, you know that you never heard me talk about the Affordable Care Act a lot. One reason being, it's not an area I've focused on, okay? So to be absolutely candid, when it's not an area that I've focused on and it's not an area that I have expertise in, I talk about it less. And I hope you appreciate that because I'm not going to be just weighing in with endless, worthless opinions, okay? That being said, there were definitely problems with the so-called Affordable Care Act. I did a Twitter survey, just started it a few hours ago, but I asked the simple question, let's just see here, here we go, how did Obamacare affect you personally? And I just gave three choices, it helped me, it hurt me, neither. 40% said neither, this is just the first 250 votes, 40% said neither, 54% said it hurt me, 6% said it helped me. All right. I have spoken to a good number of doctors. I don't want to say hundreds of doctors, but a decent number of doctors. I've spoken to many individuals just paying for insurance like you do and I do. And I have consistently heard the negative versus the positive. I've heard it in three different ways. I've heard it in terms of cost going way up. I've heard it in terms of people losing their health provider. Remember, we were told you could pick your provider and keep your provider, right? And then I've heard it in terms of doctors saying it's been really hard for them. It's made it more difficult for them. Some saying their practices are really struggling. One saying they almost had to close down accordingly. So that being the case, anecdotally, I've also heard of folks that didn't have health insurance by choice and got fined for it. Have others who didn't have health insurance before it gotten it? Yes, that's positive. And the costs are monstrous for health insurance. And it doesn't seem that healthcare providers are going out of business. So it doesn't seem that they're hurting in that respect. But from what I could tell, there were more problems with it than solutions. And look, I've had folks tell me, say from Scandinavian countries, I was talking to one couple and they said, yeah, in Scandinavia, it was true. Their taxes were like 40-50% of their income, but everything was really easy. There was nationalized health care and just real easy. Just go in a place, you have to figure this out, a plan or whatever. But then they had the downside of having massive taxes taken out of their money, and this is part of their larger social system. Most Americans don't want that. They don't want more of their taxes taken out. They want to be able to make choices. That's just the American way. We are more independent in that regard. But to the extent we need to look out for those that can't afford health care and try to figure out ways to help them, it seems to me that there has to be a better way. Now, here's the big question. The current proposal that is being put forth, that was released for people to look at and evaluate, is it an improvement? Is it a big enough improvement? Those who voted in such a strong Republican base and Republican majority and a Republican president, is that something that is positive, is a step in the right direction, is too little? I am not expert enough to know. All right? I am telling you that I weighed in where I had some background experience. Hey, towards the end of last year, I found out that the insurance provider I've had for years, well before the presidency of Barack Obama, insurance provider I've had, my family's had for years, I got dropped. And they said it's just it's as a result of the president's Affordable Care Act. I mean, this was in his last day. I mean, he did it. Barack Obama was out to get me, and he got no. But the one thing you're told, if you want to keep your provider, you can. And the cost kept going up and up every month. And we're looking, it's like, or every year, we're looking, should we change this? Should we stay with it? And is there another alternative? We ended up, of course, going with an alternative way, which didn't have a choice ultimately. Hopefully we made a much better choice in terms of what we're doing. But yeah, they said, yeah, it's kind of a grandfather thing. It's taken a while to hit, but you're out. We can't cover you anymore under the guidelines of the Affordable Care Act. So I lost my insurance. Nancy and I lost our insurance over that. I can comment on that, but I'm going to have to wait for the dust to settle. I'm going to look at what experts have to say. We'll bring on some folks who hopefully can share some wisdom with us on these things. And my simple take is this. As believers, remember, this is how I'm coming at it. As believers, we should want everyone to be able to get health care so that no one who is sick or hurting or dying is deprived of that because they don't have insurance, because they can't pay. Now, is that the role of the church or the government? Is that humanitarian, something that we just do as a society? Is it from the top down? Those are other questions. But if there were people who did have coverage under Obamacare, and they will now lose coverage, they never had it before, and now they're going to lose it, that's a problem. It's a problem that we should discuss as believers. But should this be a forced thing from the government? Should there be penalties for those who choose not to have health coverage? No. If someone chooses not to, that's their choice for whatever reason. That's their choice. Whether it's a good choice or not, that's their choice. They should be able to make it. Should companies be penalized for not providing certain things for employees? Basically, that's something that companies have to work out in terms of, ideally to me, that would be something a company works out, that this is a benefit you get. It's not a benefit that you get if you work with our company, and you choose accordingly. I don't like that company because they don't have good benefits. I prefer this company. I don't see why the government should be dictating that and mandating that. But beyond that, the intricacies of things, does the Republican plan go too far? Is it just what some call Obamacare light? Those are other questions that people far more expert than me will have to answer. So we'll discuss it in the coming days and weeks. We'll get some guests on who can give us some wisdom on that as well. All right. 866-348-7884. No, don't want to go there. No, I'll wait. I've got some clips here to play, but I am going to wait. And we're going to focus on abortion when we come back. 866-348-7884. Oh, you want to get into theology? Check out my latest article at thelineoffire.org. Is it possible to lose your salvation? Yeah, for your reading pleasure.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, some very interesting developments, friends, I want to talk to you about on the Line of Fire today. Welcome to the broadcast, 866-348-7884. Michael Brown here, delighted to spend this time with you. President Trump, the Republican-led Congress, some interesting things happening with abortion. And basically, I'm going to oversimplify things. But what is basically being said to Planned Parenthood is this. You stop doing abortions and you get federal funding. It's real simple. You do abortions, you don't get federal funding. You drop abortions, you get federal funding. Otherwise, you're not getting money. Since they claim that's only a tiny percentage of what they do and a tiny percentage of their income, and since there are other places, theoretically, a woman could go to get an abortion, why not accept it? Let's listen to Michael Brune, clip four. He is the executive director of the Carlson Sierra Club, and he has a reaction to this, quote, extreme anti-abortion bill. That's how critics are painting it. And this goes back actually to January 24th. And so I just want to give you an idea of the type of responses that you're going to be seeing with what's coming ahead. Let's listen to what he had to say.
You all issued a press release the other day saying that President Trump's border tax on Mexico he's going to use to pay for the wall is xenophobic. Yeah, maybe, or maybe, you know, you could kind of debate it, but why is that within your purview as an environmental organization?
Well, look, part of the Sierra Club's job, our mission is to explore, enjoy, and protect the planet. And we don't think that separating some parts of America from others is a good way to do that. The Sierra Club stands to protect the rights of all Americans to have clean air, clean water, and a healthy democracy in order to fight for their rights. If we start to deny a pathway to citizenship for millions of Americans, then those are the Americans who won't have an ability to use our democracy to fight for a better world.
All right. Actually, one more comment. Let's grab clip number five. This is addressing the immigrant families and et cetera, the wall. But there's more on the abortion end. Clip number five.
I mean, we can have a debate about walls and xenophobia and all that. But again, why is that germane to your mission as expressed in your mission statement? So I'll give you another example, abortion. So last year on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, you all issued a press release saying that the Sierra Club stands in solidarity, I think I'm quoting, with Planned Parenthood. Now, people feel that way. Okay. What does that have to do with the environment? Why does legal abortion make the environment better?
Well, we believe in empowering women's rights. We think that women who have rights and who have the ability to have choice about their reproductive, make their own reproductive choices will help to produce strong families and will help to protect the environment at the same time. Sierra Club is pro-choice.
But why? I mean, I get that you're pro-choice. That's fine. But that doesn't, what does that have to do with the environment? Like, how specifically does more abortion or legal abortion help the environment?
Well, it helps to address the number of people that we have on this planet. We feel that one of the ways in which we can get to a sustainable population is to empower women to make choices about their own families.
Oh, boy. Tucker Carlson obviously asking some great questions. Okay, it's 6 weeks old, but I play those clips, especially the second one, because there is going to be, just watch, all kinds of irrational defense of abortion. There is going to be all kinds of irrational support. And you watch. I remember years ago, some folks from Greenpeace, so radical left-wing environmentalist group, they came knocking on doors in our community and knocked on the door of a friend of ours, a solid Christian man, and they said, would you make a contribution to help save the baby whales? And he said, I'm more concerned with saving the baby humans. And they walked away in a huff. Oh, yeah. Watch and see the coalition that rises up against President Trump and Republican Congress as moves are made to defund Planned Parenthood and push towards a culture of life. Watch who joins together against it.
Cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, thanks, friends, for joining us today. As we've been discussing over the course of the last hour and a half, controversial things like the plan to repeal President Obama's Affordable Care Act, known as Obamacare, and replace it with something else, talking about President Trump's temporary refugee ban from potential refugees from six countries identified as hotbeds of terrorism by the previous administration. As we've been discussing those and other issues in the last few minutes, abortion and the push to defund Planned Parenthood, the question is always, is how do we respond to this, not as partisan political with partisan political attitudes, but as God's people. And there's a lot of controversy all around us. And it's everything's in a feeling of chaos. You know, it just feel like life's going on normally. It's chaos all around. How do we live? How do we respond as Christians? I'm joined again by my dear friend and colleague, James Robison, his newest book, Living Amazed, getting great responses from its readers. James, welcome again to The Line of Fire.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. It's good to be with you.
All right, so simple question. How in the world do we respond? How do we keep our heads straight? How do we keep our hearts clear? How do we keep our faith strong when there's just chaos and controversy all around us?
Well, you hear a lot about prayer, and I know a lot of Christians say they are praying. If there's ever been a time when prayer was of the utmost importance, it is now. We do have a president who said that he wants our prayers. He's made it very clear to me that he wants it with all of his heart, that he understands it's important, and so let's do it. And I do believe prayer changes things. I just think most Christians, all of us, myself included, even when we sow faithfully good seed, we want a rapid return. We want fruit right now. It looks exactly the way we expect it to look. And quite frankly, this president has strengths that actually annoy some of us, because one of them is he doesn't respond well to pressure. High pressure is not going to work on him. Prayer will work. It will not work in our time frame any more than love does. Love never fails. It just doesn't work at our pace. It doesn't work on our timetable. So I'm really encouraging Christians to just pray that God will keep wisdom flowing, that it will be welcomed, that not only the president but other leaders will come to the table of reason and welcome wisdom at that table. And I think that we've got a real good chance to actually see our prayers answered, not just pray, but see them answered. So faithfully pray. I plead with everyone to do that.
And how should people pray? Sometimes we're so political, and we have such a fixed agenda in our mind of what we want to see happen that we can miss God's heart. How would you recommend people pray for the president?
That he remains steadfast and determined, that he not be discouraged, disheartened, or distracted, but that he continue on. The situation in Washington is actually more grave and more serious than one might imagine. He called it a swamp. It's a cesspool. All of the things that we see, from leaks to accusations to various opinions and positions espoused, we have a very corrupt system. The people who have been there in the agencies that are way out of control, way overreaching, not protecting people, damaging people, those people are going to have to be rooted out and exposed. And when you move something that's been entrenched, there's going to be a backlash. There's going to be a lot of anger. This renovation process is going to be more, let's say, unattractive to watch, more frustrating to people than renovating a house in great need, a building that needs to be totally revamped. This is a bad system, and it's got to be changed. rooted up, plowed up, thrown down. So much of it has to be. I think we have a president who's willing to take what comes to do it, and we need to be praying that he won't be deterred, and we need to be praying that people will not be discouraged because of the process, but understand it has to happen. It really does. It has to happen. Washington is a hotbed of principalities and powers ruling and controlling things, and it has to be changed, which means people committed to what I consider to be anti-God, anti-biblical, anti-sanity positions, those people are not going to go happily. And right now you can see people who are entrenched in their positions that are totally opposed to what our founders understood. And boy, they are digging in and they are fighting. And they're not to be trusted. They can't be trusted. So what we got to hope is that the individuals who went in to do the job are not distracted and not deterred. Pray that. Please pray that.
So when you speak about principalities and powers, talking about spiritual strongholds, and then those are reflected by people who are entrenched within Washington. So the idea that the average American might have that you elect a new president, so you have a new administration, so it's kind of out with the old, in with the new. The fact is there are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of government employees and people in all kinds of high places that may be totally loyal to the past president or two presidents back, or that may have very, very different ideologies. And that's all coming to the surface now, isn't it? I mean, it's in a very messy, ugly way, but it's all coming to the surface now.
It has nothing to do with being sold out, even to the party or the person that preceded. You're sold out to a belief system that is rotten, damaging. It is simply doomed to failure. How long do we have to continue violating every sound principle of finance, economics, of protecting people rather than abusing them? You take many of the agencies, Michael, when they find an error, a wrong, and you look at the IRS, what it was doing, it was destroying the organizations. They don't come in and tell you've made a mistake, correct it. They come in to take you down. And the agencies that are there to regulate so often don't come in and say you're out of sync, you're out of step. They come in knowing that you're producing a tremendous amount of revenue from which they can extract not only penalties and punishment that might in some way get back to some of the people they say have been abused. They make certain they fund their own bureaucracy, their own safety net, and they don't help you get better. They can totally put you out of business.
Mm-hmm.
How in the world is that helping people when you do that? That's the way many of them are geared to think. Self-preservation, destruction of those with whom they disagree. You know, one of the things that I've said, and I believe it is as important as any insight that I have, let's say, gotten clear in my own mind in the last years. You can discern the spirit of something in a very simple fashion. Is it a spirit of destruction or a spirit of redemption? Many of our agencies are geared not to protect, but to destroy, and that has to be corrected. I'm telling you, if that happens, you turn the American people free. The other thing the church must remember, if we do return to what is being called greatness, if we got to promised land prosperity, if we don't want to be prisoners of the promised land, we better understand that with great blessings comes great self-control, and that comes from God. Self-control that works and is effective is God control, God-enabled living. Because we have a tendency in the land of the blessings to worship those blessings, to make them an idol, and actually begin to drift not only away from God and the principles of the foundation, but we actually start digging a ditch. And we get in that pit, and we go back into the pit of bondage. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, I think we got a chance to see the tables turn in the right direction, prosperity come back to the land. How are we going to handle it? That's where the church needs to step up and show people the only way we handle the great blessings of freedom is to be free and under the control of the greatest wisdom in the universe, and that's the wisdom of our Father.
Yeah, amen to all that you said, and key warnings in advance. And James, we've just got about 30 seconds. Have you been able to maintain contact with President Trump as president?
The last conversation I had with him was after the State of the Union address. It was absolutely a wonderful, wonderful time.
And, that was just last week.
I did thank him. I thank him for the way he has so openly received me and others with respect who tell him the truth and the gracious. And I did say this. I really believe this. That, you know, I said, if you're receiving Jesus the way you're receiving me and others who love him, sir, you're going to prove it to be one of the greatest miracles the world's ever seen. And that's my prayer for him, that he will hear from the Lord and heed his counsel.
Let it be so. James, thanks for being a voice for us to the president. We appreciate it deeply.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. I think it's fascinating that President Trump floated the idea, according to White House officials, floated the idea in private conversations, CNN reports, that, hey, we'll fund Planned Parenthood, government funding, if you don't provide abortions. And they immediately said, nope, nope. Is anyone surprised? According to an official statement from the White House, as I said throughout the campaign, President Trump, I'm pro-life and I'm deeply committed to investing in women's health and plan to significantly increase federal funding in support of non-abortion services such as cancer screenings. There is an opportunity for organizations to continue the important work they do in support of women's health while not providing abortion services. Yeah, Planned Parenthood is all about abortion. Not only about it, but certainly all about it. Okay, I'm not going to take any calls. I want to share a few things with you. As I'm just back from Israel, got in early yesterday morning and came right in and did radio. And now tonight, teach our students at Fire School of Ministry. So as always, hit the ground running. One reason I'm able to do that is not just having done it for years and certain discipline involved, not only because of God's grace, but that's a big, big, big part of it, but also because of mega healthy eating, that it has made a massive change in my life, massive night and day change. And as I'm getting older, I don't want to slow down. I want to speed up. I turned 62 later this month. I want to speed up, not slow down. And I don't mean I'll be going faster at 90 than at 60, but I certainly feel I can keep speeding up for quite a few years in terms of activity and pace and so on. For the glory of God and through healthy eating and God's grace and exercise and good lifestyle choices, why not? But that's not what I want to focus on. I want to focus on that, get my book, Nancy and I, our book, Breaking the Stronghold of Food. The book would not be what it is. The book wouldn't be without for Nancy's involvement in all this. But get the book, Breaking the Stronghold of Food. If you have it, be sure to post a review. If the book's been a blessing to you, please post your review on Amazon that others can read what you have to say and be encouraged. We have amazing stories coming in on a regular basis there and elsewhere. But here's what I want to talk to you about. While in Israel, I was deeply struck by something that always strikes me there. Certain things that you read about in the Bible, they really, really happened. I took a picture of these massive stones that are just laying in rubble by a wall that's been rebuilt over the years and built in different stages of history in what was Palestine for centuries. And these are massive stones that were once part of temple walls or outer walls around the temple that came tumbling down because of divine judgment on the Jewish people. It's been very costly to be chosen. That's why there's the old Jewish joke, why not choose someone else? So when you're there, you realize, wow, this stuff really happened. I was teaching on Mount Carmel, our first touring day, and doing a brief teaching on Mount Carmel about the fire really fell and things really happened there. And we put it up on Facebook as I was talking right after we put the video up. Things you read about, they took place. They took place. What's my point? There is such a thing as divine judgment. What's my point? There are such things as consequences to sin and consequences to righteousness. And we dare not forget that. Jesus said that the temple would be destroyed and that Jewish people would be scattered around the world until the times of the Gentiles were fulfilled. And it happened. And to this day, the temple's still not been rebuilt. And of course, Jerusalem is being restored and Jewish people have come back to the land just as God said would happen. And yes, our tour guide was pointing out, hey, right around here, you'll see Jewish children running around. This is what would have been in the ruins of Jerusalem before. You'll see them running around and playing now. Wow, that's just as the prophet said, and weddings taking place and celebrations taking place, as happened when the Jews returned from Babylonian exile. So it's happening as Jews return from exile around the world. Part of prophetic fulfillment, which will culminate in the turning of the Jewish people to the Messiah at the end of the age, and hopefully in ever-increasing measure until then. But you see these things, you say, wow, wow, it happened as God said. What makes us think that America is exempt from divine judgment? What makes us think that any nation is exempt from divine judgment? There are nations on the planet today that weren't here 100 years ago. There are divisions in the map that weren't here 50 years ago. There are nations that were turned into empires that ceased to exist. Peoples you read about in the Bible, they ceased to exist. They were either totally destroyed or destroyed and then assimilated into other cultures, other societies, other ethnicities, other races, and they're gone. What makes us so sure, well, that will never happen to us? Show me the chapter and the verse, please. Show me the chapter and the verse. One more thing. Being in Israel, you're reminded of the steadfast covenantal love of the Lord. You're reminded of the fact that he keeps his promises. You're reminded of the fact that he does what he says he will do. And in point of fact, his mercies are new every morning. And that's why we're not consumed. That's why we're still here. Those who have a hard time with God showing mercy to Israel, do you want him to show mercy to you? Do you want him to show mercy to the church? Is the church going to stand before God based on its good deeds? God bless us because we're so good? Or are we often going to plead for mercy because we've often failed? Why should God be merciful to us and not to Israel? When you realize, hey, God preserved the Jewish people just as he said he would, it means he keeps his word. And this is a biggie. This is a massive one. You know, this is like 100 million chess games all going on at the same time with no one knowing the outcome in advance and God telling you the outcome on every single game before it happens and every move that's going to be played. You say, how in the world does God know all that? For God to preserve his Jewish people scattered around the world, for us to be judged and yet preserved, for us to be regathered and now reestablished and now in the center of controversy worldwide. That's not just some novel. God did it. And God is doing it. And that means if you find promises in the word that apply to you, know that he will be faithful. And if there are promises you know God has given to you, hold those promises before the Lord and say, God, you promised. And then be one of those that holds God to his promises. Isaiah 62, there it says, give God no rest. You who put the Lord in remembrance, give him no rest. I taught about this last week from Jerusalem. Give him no rest until he establishes Jerusalem, the praise of all the earth, and that will be to the good of every person living on the planet. Hey, friends, this is a great time to join with us in Jewish ministry. We are uniquely positioned to reaching Jewish people around the world. Our materials, by God's grace, have meant the difference between life and death, between salvation and damnation for many, many Jews, to the point that one counter-missionary website blamed me for, quote, more spiritual deaths or more Jewish spiritual deaths than anyone on the planet, meaning our materials had reached more Jewish people with the message of Jesus than anyone. Let it be so. Your help is inestimable to us. It will help us multiply our efforts to reach the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And I want to sow into you with a wonderful package of Jewish resources, a hardcover book that you can't buy elsewhere, a DVD, an audio CD. As you partner with us this month, go to thelineoffire.org to find out more. My bottom line, face it, America, we're going to deal with God one way or another.